Having finally defeated the Persian Empire in about 448 BC, the Athenians began to build an empire of their own, leading to war with their former allies by 431 BC. Central to that empire building, and the beginnings of the Peloponnesian War, was the statesman Pericles. This is the After Dinner Scholar from Wyoming Catholic College, and I'm your host, Dr. Jim Tonkowicz. During the first of our two-week-long PEAK programs for high school students, Dr. Pavlos Papadopoulos taught a course about Pericles. His story is told by Thucydides in the Peloponnesian War and by Plutarch in Lives. In the last of the speeches Pericles delivers in Thucydides' account, he tells an angry crowd, "And yet, if you are angry with me, it is with one who, as I believe, is second to no man, either in knowledge of the proper policy or in the ability to expound it, and who is, moreover, not only a patriot, but an honest one." Was he really as good as all that? Was the age of Pericles truly the golden age of Athens? I asked Dr. Papadopoulos to begin by setting the scene before going on to answer those questions.
Pericles walks onto the stage of Athenian history when Athens has gone from being a humble city-state in Greece to being a city at the head of an empire. So Athens, along with Sparta, had led the Greek resistance to the Persian invasions that Herodotus describes, the Persian Wars. And after the end of that story, after the Persians are repelled from Greece, Sparta decides to go home and stop the war, essentially stop participating in the war, whereas Athens continues the fight and creates what is initially a defensive alliance. It becomes known as the Delian League. So Athens is at the head of this defensive alliance so that the Greek cities can stay together in case the Persians come back. But they continue to expand the war and bring in new allies, expanding into Ionia, which is now in western Turkey. And they really become the head of this great naval empire. And Pericles at this point is a young to middle-aged man. He's just one of many generals that Athens has in its military. And he really reaches the peak of his career when Athens is at the head of this empire. And as Thucydides tells it in a section of his text called the Pentakontateia, the 50-year rise of Athens, you see Athens come to this position of power, and then you see Athens flailing about, sort of stomping about like a giant blind misusing their power. They go on this expedition to invade Egypt, which ends up very, very poorly, and you get the sense that they don't quite know what to do with this amount of power. That's around the time when Pericles really rises to be the first man in Athens, and so he's faced with being a leader in a democracy which has factions within it who are contending over who should be in charge and what they should do with all of this power and wealth that they've just acquired. And his task is really to tame and orient Athens and enable it to flourish for as long as possible in this position of power.
Now, is he in that position of power when he gives his famed funeral oration?
He is, yes. So the famous passages in Thucydides, his speech, the funeral oration, and then he has a few other speeches, those are really towards the end of his career, because Thucydides' focus is on the Peloponnesian War, and that's a war that Pericles leads Athens into and then dies in the second year. So we get to see Pericles stealing the nerves of the Athenians, telling them not to back down from Sparta, telling them to not to give in to any Spartan, make any concessions towards Sparta. We get to see him counsel the Athenians on how they should conduct the war. We get to see him give this wonderful funeral oration after the first year of war. And then shortly after that, he dies. And in Thucydides' history, Thucydides takes it as a point of reference and says, we now see how Athens fell apart when it deviated from Pericles' advice once he had left the scene.
Now, in that funeral oration, he praises Athens, claiming, quote, "We're different from everyone else and thus superior to everyone else," meaning in large measure, I think, those lowlifes in Sparta.
Right.
How is Athens different and how are they superior from Pericles' point of view?
Yeah. According to Pericles, Athens manages to combine really freedom and order. freedom and public-spiritedness. He says, in effect, that they are more easygoing than the Spartans and than many other cities, and yet they're not lawless. So there's a freedom to live however one wants in Athens, and yet somehow that doesn't manifest itself as a kind of corrosive individualism. One of his tasks in the funeral oration is to praise Athens to the Athenians, but also to convince the Athenians to continue to be dedicated to their city, to continue to be dedicated to the common good or the common advantage of Athens. And so it's a tricky rhetorical situation that he finds himself in, because he's speaking to a people who are more inclined towards individualism than the Spartans are, who are living in a more permissive society than the Spartans are, and yet they're facing the Spartans in combat. How are they going to stand up to the rigor and intense solidarity of the Spartan way of life? And what he does over the course of the speech is he builds up the image of the glory of Athenian power and tells his Athenians that they should feast their eyes on the power of Athens, so that love of her power fills their hearts, and then they will be entirely devoted to her. So he says that they are open in their debates, they are open in their kind of ways of life that they permit in the city, and all of these habits have led them to this position of power, and they haven't had to go through the same stringent martial upbringing that the Spartans do in order to be in this position of power.
Sparta, by contrast, was nothing but an armed camp, really.
Exactly, and the Spartans, as Plutarch relates very nicely in his Life of Lycurgus, Sparta totally subordinates the individual to the city. Plutarch compares what Lycurgus, the lawgiver of Sparta, did with Sparta to sort of the building of a hive, so that every Spartan citizen is like a bee within the hive, and there's almost a total identification between the individual good and the common good. And they're all the Spartan men and women are raised to be tough and have the martial virtues and the virtues of self-sacrifice for the good of the city.
Now, Thucydides sums up Pericles' rule thus. He says, "And what was in the name a democracy became in actuality rule by the first man." And of course, once Pericles dies, Athenian leadership is in chaos. How effective was, or maybe how effective is, a democracy, the Athenian democracy in particular?
Yeah, one of the great challenges is that Athens is a democracy and it's ruling an empire. And as one of Pericles' more ignoble successors points out shortly after his death, a democracy, because it is of many minds and because it tends to be more fickle, it is terrible at maintaining a constant policy. It's terrible at being dedicated to long-term projects and the consistency that is needed to carry out those long-term projects. So what Thucydides and Plutarch in their portraits of Pericles show us is that a democracy needs wise leadership. One of the remarkable things about the life of Pericles is that he's an example of how that wise leadership can be combined with the openness of a democracy, at least for a time. And the key here really is rhetoric. You need, instead of a regime in which force or power of some kind keeps one person or one class in charge, Pericles is constantly going to the people and proclaiming, convincing them that a certain policy is correct. And it's by, he builds up his own authority and maintains the respect of the people by convincing them constantly through his rhetoric that this is a sensible policy and this is in their interest. So I guess what I would say is what Periclean Athens shows us is that democracy cannot be a stable and good form of government without a flourishing culture of rhetoric and without a very high practice of rhetoric in its statesmen.
Well, and Thucydides shows us a situation where everybody's angry at Pericles, and he responds. Would you talk about that response?
Sure. So he gives his wonderful funeral oration after the first year of combat with the Spartans, and then immediately afterwards, Athens is hit by a plague, the terrible plague. And after the plague has sort of run its course in its first season, the Athenians are furious with Pericles. They've suffered a year of war with Sparta, and now they're suffering the plague. And so they blame everything on Pericles. It almost seems like a kind of divine judgment passed on Pericles and on Athens. And Pericles upbraids them. He says that they have to remain resolved, that the situation really has not changed very much. No one could have foreseen the plague coming. All they can do is plan for what they can anticipate and then sort of bear up under these superhuman punishments, or not punishments, superhuman sufferings of something like the plague. He also says in this speech after the people are angry with him, there's a really wonderful passage. He says, "If you are angry with me, it is with one who, as I believe, is second to no man, either in knowledge of the proper policy or in ability to expound it, and who is moreover not only a patriot but an honest one." And he explains how these four criteria are all necessary to be a statesman. And he effectively says to the Athenians, if you know anyone better than me who meets these qualifications to a greater extent, that's fine. You should put him in my place. But for now, I'm the best man that you have. And so my policies are still the most sensible, even if they could not have foreseen this plague hitting us.
Was he as good as all that? Was this the golden age of Athens?
I think it was. And I say it was, and yet I also recognize that Pericles was not perfect and he did not engineer a kind of permanent greatness in Athens. And that's not what we should expect of the statesman. One of the really interesting things about looking at Pericles in detail is that you gain an appreciation of the limits of politics and the limits of human things. Human things are always in change. Regimes are always rising and falling, or in some state of growing more great or decaying. And Pericles did, I think, the best that any man could have done in his time. Again, it's clear after his death how quickly things fall apart. It's clear that when someone like him is not on the scene, the greatness of Athens crumbles. And this was a time in which Pericles built up the great monuments of Athenian culture that we still know and admire, in the Parthenon in particular. It was a time in which he cultivated a culture in Athens that included men like Socrates and then later Plato and Aristotle. And I think that he did the best that any man could have done with those circumstances. A statesman doesn't choose the circumstances that he's born into, or choose the city of his birth, or choose what things are like in a city when he rises to power, but we judge him based on what he does in that position. And I think in that position, Pericles did as well as anyone could have.
Now, why did you choose to teach about Pericles at our PEAK program?
I chose to teach about Pericles, first because I love Pericles, and I love the authors who write about him, Thucydides in particular, and also Plutarch. Secondly, I wanted to make sure to introduce our students to the specifically political aspect of our program. Here at WCC, we have humanities every semester, theology every semester, and a variety of other classes throughout the 4 years. And one of the things that you might be deceived about in just looking at the catalog is that humanities actually, it's a mixture. It includes literature in a very great place within the humanities curriculum. It also includes these works of political history. In the freshman year and in the sophomore year, the study of ancient Greece and Rome. In the senior year in particular, the study of the American regime and the American nation. And Pericles is a good example of how politics plays a role in our humanities curriculum. Finally, I made this proposal for the Pericles course before the coronavirus broke out, but having made it, I was then struck this spring by the relevance of studying Pericles, precisely because of the plague of Athens, which hits Athens during his life and actually winds up taking his life. Thucydides has a wonderfully disturbing discussion of the way in which the plague corrodes Athenian society and sort of exposes the darkness in man's heart as it runs through Athens. And that, in combination with sort of seeing the contingency of Pericles' life and what he's able to do, is a good reminder of the limits of politics. And I think we need to appreciate the limits of what political effort can do if we are to do the best with politics that we can, if we are to conduct politics responsibly.
While the politics of Athens does not, in fact, make our politics look tame, it nonetheless reminds us that politics is messy. It also reminds us that politics matter, and that ignoring our duty as citizens is not a reasonable option. About those who had not participated in the political life of the city, Pericles said, "We are unique in considering that man who takes no part in these to be not apolitical, but useless." Food for thought during this exceedingly strange election year. For Wyoming Catholic College, this is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.